Self-care. It's such a deep, layered word, and for me, it's really become the process of getting to know yourself, showing up for yourself over and over again. In creation of the Self-Care Creature podcast, I want to teach you, too, how to have a relationship with yourself. We're going to dive into the psychological and physiological unfoldings of adopting what I love to call a self-care lifestyle. This podcast is here to help you, the stressed out but spiritually minded individual who can feel that wild calling in your heart, who wants to develop self-care rituals to support your daily living, give you the confidence and know-how to live through your intuition and raise your self-worth. You deserve it. You are capable of this. And I want to help you understand how the hell to get there, what it actually means, and how do you actually live it. That's where my intention is with this podcast. The Self-Care Creature Podcast, brought to you by me, your host, Courtney Klopp. Let's dive in. All right, here we are. Welcome, Kristen.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, I am really, really excited about these conversations we've decided to have around self-advocacy. And today we're diving in with that part one for self-advocacy in the American healthcare system. I just made like parentheses with my hands.
It's necessary.
Right. Well, why don't you just open us up with telling us a bit about who you are, what your background is. We'll just start there.
Yeah. So in summary, I guess, because it's hard to kind of lump me into a nutshell, but I am a retired chef turned health coach and now clinical nutritionist in training. So all in the health space, but I really started being passionate about food and excited about food, and then kind of ended up going down my own several year long journey of getting diagnosed with Lyme disease after all. Which kind of stimulated my interest in health. And that's when I went back to school to do health coaching and now clinical nutrition to kind of still keep my passion for food alive, but really utilize what I've learned myself through my own journey in finding a diagnosis and getting proper treatment, but also just how much I know about food has really helped me navigate all the special diets I've been put on and everything like that. So really wanting to help people do the same. So it kind of put me in this whole roundabout thing to be where I'm at now, which is, like I said, a nutrition student, a health coach. I teach cooking classes. I'm still kind of part all of those things, but really just driven by helping people understand and pursue health in an achievable manner.
Ah, that's amazing. I resonate with that so much because I think you know, but I started out my journey in culinary school, like way back in the day. That was step one for me and all of my education. And yeah, it's become this like whole roundabout, like you're saying, place. Yeah. And here you are. And I love that bridge that I think so many of us have where we take our personal experience and then want to bring it out to help other people, and that you're actually turning back towards the healthcare system, it sounds like, with like going to school for clinical nutrition.
Yeah, I think it's really important to me to open myself up to what I can practice, because what a lot of people don't understand about the scope of practice of a health coach is we cannot legally provide nutrition advice. And I think there's this confusing gray area where I work on recipes, I teach people cooking, I do a lot with food, but I can't give nutrition advice as a health coach. Yeah. So the chef and health coach makes it confusing, like blurred lines for the nutrition piece. So this is a way not only to get some deeper scientific background in everything that I already kind of knew, but I'll also legally cover myself to be able to help people in a deeper way. But I'm very lucky to go to a school that is more natural based. So they also recognize the pieces like self-care and like herbals and different alternative methods of healing in addition to the typical clinical nutrition stuff. So it's really a cool pathway for the school, but like I said, it kind of just completes the trifecta so that way I can help people with whatever they come to me for, but really just have that evidence-based background information to go with everything else.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I love that you're doing that. I know I don't think a lot of people realize like all of these different little facets and how nutrition fits in, but then actually legally and competently giving nutrition advice actually takes some education and some background, because I think that I was in a similar place when I was doing beach body coaching and even as a personal trainer. It was everybody wants nutrition, nutrition. And that's why I ended up going back to school for nutritional therapy at one point to have more of that like science education background, because especially doing beach body, the people that I was working with was like, just Pinterest your meal plan. And I was like, hold on, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
So,
Same, one of the same reasons I got out of Beachbody as well. I didn't realize you also did Beachbody. So funny. We're both culinary school baddies and then
oh
Beachbody
my
and end up
gosh,
where we are
that
talking
is
about
so
all
funny. I love that
this.
we, with all the work we've done together and things like this, that never came up.
Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah, wow, that's like a whole nother conversation we could have, but we'll
Yes.
stick here today.
Yes.
I can pick out self-advocacy, I'm sure, from some of this story you've shared, but I'm just want to hear it straight from you. Like, why self-advocacy, and what does that mean to you? Why do you feel so passionate about it?
Yeah, I think it's something that's not talked about enough, where people give you the information on nutrition, they'll give you the recipes, they'll give you exercise plans, but when you're just given plans and don't really connect all of the self pieces in there, like A, you don't know if it's right for you, if you're just being told to do it, but then B, to be able to speak up for yourself and get something different, whether it's a diagnosis, whether it is, you know, with your personal trainer, with your therapist. And I think that so much has gone away with current communication in societal times, that people would rather avoid the conversations than actually utilize their voice to get somewhere. And I know this is just kind of like a roundabout way of why it's important to me, but I can start with my story. I won't get too deep into my Lyme story just because that is a whole nother podcast in its own. But
Sure.
for summary, I was sick with mono for about a year, and I never really got better after that. I was 19, 20 years old, sleeping 18 hours a day. My
Wow.
doctor kept saying, well, if it's not better, come back in 2 weeks. Then it was, well, you're just a stressed out young person, like college student. I'm like, I don't think it's stress. Like, I was trying to explain all my symptoms, and I went to four different doctors, and that fourth doctor sent me to a psych consult because she thought I was a hypochondriac.
Whoa.
And that really stimulated my entire drive to do something different for myself, but then now help other people with that, because there was this point where I started to wonder, like, maybe she's right. Maybe I am crazy. Maybe I am making all these symptoms up. Maybe this isn't a real thing. Because it wasn't just the fatigue. I was having GI issues. I was having, you know, I would get very tired doing almost nothing, which is hard when I was cooking in the kitchen because you're on your feet all day. And I ended up quitting the kitchen and really just struggling to do daily life things. And I'm like, could this really be all in my head? And I was dealing with low grade fevers where I'm like, well, that's not something that's made up. So I was kind of like in this internal battle of knowing my truth of what I was experiencing, mixed with this now question, because this quote unquote authority figure of my doctor was saying, okay, you should go to psych. So I went just to entertain her, I like went to the psych consult, and when I was listening to all of the questions, I was really realizing that the stem of everything that I was experiencing wasn't mental health, but mental health was a factor in what I was experiencing. And I knew for myself, because I'm pretty good at being in tune to myself, that that was the difference, that depression and anxiety that I was experiencing was a symptom and not the diagnosis. And that kind of really stimulated my whole path, because I had to go to two more doctors after that just to get somebody to believe me enough to start to work on gut health, start to work on these other things that eventually turned into getting diagnosed with Lyme disease. So it took me those six doctors and 3 years to getting my diagnosis, which typical Lyme diagnoses are not quick, but I think it would have been a lot longer for me had I not learned to have the strength and power in my own voice to stand up for what I know is going on and keep going down the path of finding somebody who would work with me and listen to me and believe me through all of it. Because, I mean, like I said, you start to wonder, like, maybe I am crazy, but then here we are on the other side of a diagnosis, and it was all my real truth all along. So that is really kind of where my passion for helping others do this came from.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. That especially that piece that you're tuning into, like that realization, like my depression and anxiety is stemming from what else, something else going on here that just like brings like chills to my shoulders. I'm just like, wow, like what a profound realization.
Yeah, it was interesting because it was also a time where people were being more open about mental health, and a couple of my friends were starting to get on like anxiety or depression medication. So I'm like, maybe I am just like the rest of them. Like maybe I'm just in denial that this is like actually mental health stuff. But then I'm like, you can't explain the low-grade fevers or these other symptoms that were happening didn't really make sense with that. But I also just had this like intuitive knowing that it was not just that. And I wasn't going to settle for somebody just telling me to come back in 2 weeks or go get on some depression medication and everything else will figure itself out, because I knew that wasn't where I was at that time.
And that advice almost feels a little bit like a band-aid. Like, and it's like, how many times do you, are you going to tell me to come back? 2 weeks, 2 weeks. Like, yeah, that's so exhausting. Yeah, I think that's amazing that you found that within yourself to really advocate for yourself.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't easy at the time, but it's really fueled my passion for helping others do it, even to the point of like a lot of my clients or friends or people I will literally script help prepare them to go to a doctor, so that way if they don't feel like they know what to say, but they know they want to stand up for themselves or they feel prepared to use their voice, but they're like, okay, but what do I say? I love helping people with that, because there are these other pieces to it. It's not just advocating for yourself in speaking up, it's having the right language and terminology that can shift how you are like responded to, as well as almost like the self-knowing piece, the self-awareness mixed with language and terminology mixed with self-efficacy, because we also need to believe in what we're doing, because otherwise people with high egos will sniff that out immediately if you don't have some sort of confidence or empowerment to back it up.
I think that's a really big key is like feel like finding that confidence within yourself as you're going into it. And this I already brings me into so many of the other questions that I have laid out for us today. So I'm just going to start going through them. But yeah, many people do find that it's very intimidating to navigate the healthcare system, exactly as you're saying, and speaking to doctors. And I
especially had this also experience in the last year when I was dealing with my mother, which ended up leading to her death, but she was in the hospital for like 9 or 10 months. And I didn't realize just how much of a problem I had with our healthcare and medical system until I found myself in the hospital trying to communicate with doctors. And it just like, first of all, I guess I had to recognize that that the hospital was a triggering place for me, and that I had a deep belief that like these people weren't going to hear me and they weren't going to help me. And having that belief going into it didn't help me at all. I'll say
Yeah.
that. But I'm just saying, for people that find it intimidating, you already mentioned a couple of things, but what kind of advice or strategies would you offer? You've mentioned scripts and then like finding some of that like confidence within yourself before going in. Is there anything else?
I think that the scripts, along with some prior research, goes a long way, but it's not research the way people think. Like, if you research to know, you don't need to know everything about the topic or even have like very specific things that you want. But just knowing some general terminology can, like I said, go a long way. For example, I recently went to a new physical therapist. I've been having this issue on and off for a long time. Won't get too deep into that, but she did bring up. She was talking to me kind of on a surface level, and I asked some direct questions with specific terminology related to what I was experiencing. And her whole demeanor towards me changed in the sense of she's like, oh, you know what that is. Let me speak to you differently, because she could give me more information because I knew a little bit more than the average person did. And then not only does she give me more information to work with, but she took me a little bit more seriously because I was prepared and not just looking either A, looking for a band-aid like some people come into doctors doing, or B, just kind of having done some of the prep work. And because sometimes it's not even the ego thing where the doctor just doesn't want to give you the time of day, but a lot of times the people they're dealing with don't even know the very basic stuff. So they will talk to you on a surface level because that's the level that's the general population can receive it as. So if you come prepared, whether it is with the script or just some terminology in your back pocket around whatever issue you're dealing with, a lot of times you can get to that like second layer of educational discussion in that appointment just because you do have this, below surface level information. But that being said, sometimes you don't know what you're dealing with, so it's hard to really prepare if you are kind of in this like area where you're not sure. And that's where the scripts can really come into play, because if you can prepare to ask for specific things, then you oftentimes are treated differently as well, in the sense of maybe like somebody I was dealing with, or not dealing with, but somebody I was working with, was wanting to get off birth control and not want to go on a con like a contraceptive pill of any sorts, and already anticipating her doctor saying, okay, well, we're taking you off this. Like, what are we going to put you on? What's the next thing? Or do you want an IUD? Like, what? Because that is literally how they're trained. And so working with the scripts of, if the doctor says that, here's what we're going to say. If the doctor says something else, like trying to pre-plan like three options of what the doctor might say and what your follow-up response is, because then instead of getting faced with your doctor saying, okay, well, we got to put you back on something, a lot of times that's when we start to lose our confidence or start to feel disempowered or small or shrink up because we're like, ugh, now they're questioning me. So if we can kind of prepare these things and say, like, well, actually, no, I'm looking at staying off birth control for a while to regulate my hormones. And like, where are we stimulating? Like, where do you want that conversation to then go? And having that preparation helps you with that empowerment and confidence piece. to where if you are not prepared with the terminology or the language that you need, then you still have this conversational preparation to fall back on when you start to get a little nervous, because it is a little nerve-wracking.
So nerve-wracking. And it can be intimidating. Like you're saying, it's like doctors are viewed as these authority figures rather than like somebody that works with you. Most people, at least that I know, do view doctors as like somebody that holds like the information. Like especially growing up with my grandparents, which of course is a different era entirely, but it's like, you just do what the doctor says. Like the doctor knows best, essentially. And so, yeah, I love what you're saying here. Part of what I hear you saying is like knowing your intentions as you go into it. And like that intention of like, actually, like my plan is to not be on birth control, and like owning that for yourself and knowing that those are the options you want to discuss. I think that's really great. And also something else that you had mentioned that I'll just repeat back to is like, yeah, like finding the space to want to ask questions, and just that reminder that it's okay to ask questions. And I think that's something that I had to come to for myself is like, and I've learned that all through those 9, 10 months with my mom, but it was like basically like facing conflict was a really big thing for me. And I had to come to realize like, well, what if conflict, the other side of conflict or another angle of conflict is just asking questions. Like, I'm just genuinely curious. I want to know. And if you can find it within yourself, even though it's vulnerable to say like, I actually don't know what you're talking about. Like, could you slow it down? Can you tell me what that means? But of course that is intimidating. And especially when you get into a hospital setting, which is what I was in, people don't have the time and they don't want to take the time to like really slow down and be with you because they're just completely understaffed and overworked there, you know?
Yeah. And I think like that being said is like not also taking things personally, because if you look at the nature of our healthcare system, it is not a healthcare system at all. It's a disease care system. Yeah. And there isn't focus on preventative stuff as much as it literally is a lot of band-aids for disease care. But like even talking about the birth control thing, the way gynecologists are literally trained is to give, like, to prescribe birth control. Like, that's how they're trained. So when you can also not look at the personal side of it and look at like that, they're just doing what they're trained. It helps you engage with them differently, because sometimes that the conversations are just as hard for them as they are for us, because we're questioning, probably it feels like to them we're questioning their authority, but really we're just curious in what is actually happening with our body. And I think kind of with that is like not taking it personally, but also looking at it from the stance of like, a doctor should be your consultant, not the, like, you're the CEO of your body. This is something like my free guide on my website is like this, something like the CEO body guide. I forget what I called it. but it's like, you should be the CEO of your body. Your doctors are all your consultants, because you know your body best. Yeah. And you make the ultimate decision. So they can say, I think this is best, and you can ask them why, so you know why, and then you can look at all your options. And I think, you know, part of that too is asking what the other options are, because sometimes when we hear like, this is what you should do, it's like, okay, well, what are my other options and why is this one best? Kind of going back to asking the questions, like you said. And in a way, you sometimes have to demand that time. I have experienced it in the hospital setting just last November. I was dealing with a really bad asthma flare-up, and I went to the hospital like gasping for my life for air. Like, I've never been that wheezy in my life. And I had to get a breathing treatment every 4 hours. On the dot, that's how long the breathing treatment lasts. Every 4 hours, or it lasts for 4 hours, and every fourth hour on the dot, I had to get a new breathing treatment. And come the morning, the doctor said, well, we are not really sure what this is being caused by, so we're just going to send you home. And I started to panic because I'm like, I've needed this, like, get the breathing treatment that they're giving me every 4 hours for the last overnight. And
Got him.
now you're going to send me home with my same inhaler that wasn't working for the last 2 days that ended me up in the hospital. Like, I'm going to be back here in a couple hours. And that, I'm glad I had the background in advocating for myself that I did because I was able to bring that up right then and there. I said, okay, I hear you. And like, what was the point of me staying overnight then? We didn't get anywhere, and I'm not leaving here until you give me something else, whether it's testing, whether it's the breathing treatment at home, like something, because I will be back here.
Yeah.
And that was really hard for me to experience in the hospital setting, like you said, when they don't want to give you the time of day because the doctor left. But I had to call back who I could in. So I got a nurse who then talked to the doctors, who then brought me a lung doctor because I hadn't talked to a lung doctor the entire time I was there, even though it was a clear lung issue. So I think, kind of like you said, it's hard in this space where people don't have time for you. And that's where I think finding who will make time for you because they will
Yeah.
get the right people is part of it, but also knowing when to use your emotions, because I've also learned, unfortunately, that the hospital system prioritizes people based on how emotionally stable they kind of are. So the more I panicked and freaked out, or the more I allowed myself to cry and feel all of that I was feeling, that I was trying to stuff down to like present myself better for the doctor and not come across as crazy, especially having this, PTSD in the background of being called a hypochondriac,
Yeah.
but utilizing it in the right time to get them to listen to me. And it's unfortunate that you have to kind of like play the game that way, but I got emotional, and then that's when they started to realize, like, oh, okay, no, she's scared to go home at this point, and maybe we should give her a lung doctor and whatnot. So, I mean, that's kind of a whole other story in itself, of
Totally.
different pieces of self-advocacy. But just moral of that story is like having each step of the way, having the empowerment to stick up for myself, even if it felt really crappy. But it's interesting because I even looked back at that doctor's report and where the nurses, where the respiratory specialist, the pulmonologist, everybody said patient's wheezing, heard the wheezing, whatever. That this doctor that kind of just was going to send me home, she wrote, patient claims she's wheezing, patient claims this, patient claims that, and nothing was definitive. So also I can look back at that and say every other doctor said they could hear the wheezing, they knew this stuff was going on, and this one doctor that wanted to write me off said claims everything. So this is where also, like, whether you're searching for doctors, like a primary care or specialist, or you are in a hospital, like, it's always okay to go to the next doctor if somebody's not giving you what you need, versus trying to just like really work at that one person, because you're not going to make them believe you if they start that way. So it's okay to just move on to the next person. And I was like, okay, well, she doesn't believe me, so I'm going to get somebody who does. And that, I mean, it worked for me because I got the diagnosis and now I'm better and like whatever. But it was definitely, a different experience than everyday experience of like just searching for a doctor, searching for a diagnosis. Like you said, the
Right.
hospital setting is so different. But
Completely
it
different.
can be done there too.
Yeah, I guess there's so many layers to all of it. Yeah, and especially that emotional piece that you're sharing too, I can resonate with that even from the perspective of, personally experiencing if you do get too emotional that they also don't want to talk to you. So it's like it's this push and play, and then you're right, like the way the reports are being written, the way somebody's hearing you, like language is also so important, like just so many different factors. And I think something that was really hard for me but that has been beneficial for me is trying to assume the best, like notice. And with that, I had to notice that I was assuming the worst. And so just trying to be like, okay, like, you know, maybe I don't know what's going on with you, but like, it doesn't seem like you're hearing me. So I'm just gonna like move on to the next person, like you're saying, you know, and just keep advocating for yourself in that regard and to keep asking questions. And I love what you're saying too, this reminder that our healthcare system is more a disease care system. And that was like a really big light bulb for me over that last year with my mom, especially because I just felt so devastated and completely defeated in the healthcare system. And I was talking to a mentor and doctor of mine that, and I don't remember what I said. I said something like, I just feel so frustrated because I know like there are no like healing options. We're not really talking about her like getting better, you know? And he was, and I can't remember exactly what my verbiage was, but what he said to me is that the healthcare system does not promise healing. They don't promise to heal people. They will treat you. And that's what they're there to do. And that was like huge mind blowing experience for me. And it actually helped me to take a step back and realize like, oh shit, like, yes, this is what these people are trained to do. They're doing their best. And this isn't like a system that, yeah, is going to offer like root causes and that full long-term healing. And unfortunately, like that's very bittersweet, of course, and can be very unfortunate. But when you can learn how to work with it for what it is, I think that that helps you navigate the system a lot better.
Yeah. And I think that piece of just knowing that that's how it's set up, you also approach it differently because
yeah.
Like I will go into my pulmonologist and my primary care doctor. I say, okay, this is going on. I know like this asthma stuff. I know that I need to go on medication to get me over this hump while I'm searching for the root cause. So it's also, you start to learn when and where to utilize these consultants, doctors as consultants,
yeah,
because I'm utilizing them to get me where I'm going, which is I'm working now with a new Lyme and mold doctor to figure out like what is flaring all of this up. And unfortunately, a lot of times it has to be like that. You have to have different providers and alternative providers. But it helps you then when you do need to approach, because I mean, the Western medical system is important for a lot of things, even like yearly visits and like gynecology visits and getting like your yearly checks, things like that are still important. Even if you're not sick, they're still important. I encourage all of my clients to go get blood work so you have a baseline in case you ever are sick or even like, I don't want to get into COVID, but even how many people are seeing significant changes post COVID, where if you don't have this baseline blood work before something like that might happen, you know, you don't know what your normal is or what you're working towards even. So this is where we can learn to utilize the system for what it is and then not allow it to make us feel small when we're approaching it for something different. Because a lot of times, I mean, we go in and we want these root cause things and then we're so upset when we don't get it. And it's like, okay, but am I going to the place that is going to give me that? Probably not.
Right.
So yeah, that is definitely a piece that helps self-advocacy feel easier, is knowing your true intention and what the establishment you're going into can even provide you.
Yeah. I love that we share this a shared interest or have this like shared passion about like client-centered healthcare and really putting yourself and or our clients at the center of this web and being in relationship with all of your practitioners and that there can be a wide variety. And I think that's what can be challenging in navigating so much of the Western model is that they don't necessarily want to bridge outside of their healthcare system. Like, of course, like you have to go to a different provider for every little thing within that model. But then when it comes to like, well, I'm seeing a masseuse or an energy healer, or I also have a life coach, or like, you know, it's up until this point, I think it's shifting now, but it has just been very challenging for people to really even know what that means or how other modalities can help. And so I love that you share this passion with me of helping people find their voice and find the practitioners that can support them best, and then how to navigate the healthcare system to get what they need.
Yeah. And I think that's where health coaches or similar service providers can be so beneficial, because a lot of times if you tell your doctor you're seeing an acupuncturist and you're going to a massage therapy and you're doing all these other things, they might start to, again, write you off because whatever. And it's like, to have somebody like a health coach not only help you with the scripts, help you with the language and terminology, help you prepare for things, but they can also be that sounding board of, like, when you're trying to navigate building your own medical wellness team, like, it's so helpful to have that person to talk to you about it versus, you know, you end up telling your doctor more than they need to know. Because, I mean, for example, I actually got my fallopian tubes removed this year. I do not have never wanted children, and I don't want to be on birth control anymore. And that was the path that I chose. And my insurance wasn't panning out to go with my doctor that I love here. My gynecologist is phenomenal. She knows about Lyme disease. She's always taken me seriously, listened to me, really felt like she was present in the office every visit. And I wanted her to do the surgery, and the insurance wasn't going to cover it. And she says, anybody can do this surgery, but I'm going to give you advice in going to the next doctor. And it was awesome that she was helping me learn more deeply how to advocate for myself in her profession. But something she said is, just go in there with the very base details. Don't say, well, I have Lyme and studies are showing they pass Lyme in utero, like, I don't want kids because of that. Or don't, she's like, don't tell them any of your story. Just go in there and say, I've never wanted kids. I don't want kids. I just want to get this surgery, and leave it at that. Because otherwise doctors can even start reading into the story of, like, oh, well, maybe you'll get in remission and then you can have children, which studies are showing that doesn't matter. But, like, whatever the doctor may or may not know about Lyme, most of them don't. But they can take any of these pieces of information and spin it against you. And that's not necessarily something I would have thought of, because to me, that's an easy description for not wanting kids, other than knowing myself that I never have wanted to carry a child in my body. That's not enough for some people. It felt like a science-based fallback to say, well, I pass Lyme in utero and I don't want to give a child Lyme. And yet people still question that. So it was interesting to have that experience with her, for her to kind of coach me through it, but also, again, learning myself of, like, when to share certain pieces of information with doctors and who to share them with, because integrative doctors are generally more open to all of the things you want to tell them, where if you are going to a Western medicine doctor, they're going to be less open. But yeah, so that's, I mean, total different story again. I know I've been sharing a lot of stories, but I think it is, you know, as much as there's these downsides of Western medicine, there are good people like this gynecologist and stuff that will work with you and coach you through it. And having those people on your team is incredible if you can find them. But while you're navigating all of that, having somebody else, whether it is a friend, whether it is a health coach, to kind of be with you through the whole experience can make a world of difference also. Because I know I'm lucky to have had my own energy coach and a friend of mine who is a couple of steps ahead of me in the Lyme diagnosis game. And just having that person to, whether it's prepping the scripts like we talked about, or just sounding board, like, hey, this is what this doctor said, what do you think? Having that as an extra support really can make a world of difference too, in feeling empowered to advocate for yourself, because it is hard when you have to when you feel like you're keeping it all to yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of happens for a lot of people who don't have the safe, supportive person or circle of people to fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for mentioning that, because that's such a big part of it. And I've just this last year also have come to realize just how much of a verbal processor I am. And like, I need that space to talk about it with other people. And yeah, when you don't have people in your life that share those same views, like in your personal life, let alone a professional setting, it can be really challenging. And it is challenging. It can be challenging to find those right practitioners, as you're saying. But just want to reiterate what you said too, that the right people are out there, and that there even are those good people working within the healthcare system. And I mean, we can flip it too. There are people that aren't great working outside of that healthcare model too, right? So I think it's just taking that seat of discernment and knowing who you are and knowing that you want to have your voice and you want to sit in that space of calm and working with yourself to be able to get there so that you can begin to ask those questions and bridge that gap for yourself. And I always love to remind everyone, like, we're all human beings. Like, we are just all human beings in the world with our own unique backgrounds that paint the picture of our experiences. And yeah, it can be really shitty and so disruptive to like my nervous system when I come across like some sort of healthcare authority that is just an asshole, for example, or like won't give me the time of day. But learning how to move through that and regulate my system, especially in real time, but of course that takes practice, are just like really great tools to have with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you said earlier too, about like, even when you can acknowledge that you're not being fully heard for what you're saying, and not being afraid to say that in the face of a doctor, is like, I don't actually think you're hearing my concerns. And that's kind of where like functionality and objective stuff comes, because a lot of doctors will look at the objective information. This is what the tests say, this is what your scan shows. And being able to then say, okay, well, I hear you, and functionality wise, this is still my experience. So how do you explain that? And being able to just further ask those types of questions, and really be able to say that, like, yeah, I hear you, and I don't feel like you're hearing me at the level I need to be heard. And if that person's not going to do that for you, it's okay to go to the next one. And I know that in itself is exhausting, because if you're working with insurance, especially, it's a process to go through insurance, find a list of doctors. And that's, like I said, a whole process in itself. Reading reviews helps, but you still don't always get the full picture in those reviews, which is why I love to write reviews of my doctors, because I want somebody to be able to know, like, that, like, my gynecologist, I wrote her a raving review. I said she listens to everything that I say and truly hears me, and I want people to know that. So if you have great doctors, please review them. But like I said, I know that the process of finding a doctor is exhausting, especially when so many of us have the phone call anxiety. Like, we don't even want to just call and schedule it. Like, that piece feels like a lot. And so I know that each of the pieces can feel like a lot, but I promise it is worth it if you continue the pursuit to find the person who's going to be right for you. And I always come back to the trust your gut piece too. If it doesn't feel good the first time, you don't need to give the doctor two or three times for you to fully decide, because a lot of times your first instinct is pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with that, but that's also really hard. It's really hard to find that discernment within yourself. I've definitely hundreds of times, maybe that's an exaggeration, but just so many times been like, oh, well, I don't know. You know, like, they're like, I'm just gonna give it another try. And it's like, yeah, when you're consistently disappointed, just take that as a note for yourself and just look into trying something different.
Yeah. And I think that's where the self awareness and self efficacy piece is. The come into play, because the stronger those are, the easier the self-advocacy comes, because it's really hard to advocate for yourself when you don't know yourself. And if you're
Right.
not really aware of what you're experiencing, or you're not really aware of, how you may or may not feel about something, it makes it harder to advocate for yourself. So really working on that piece, and that's where coaching, whether it's health coaching, energy coaching, therapy, any of those modalities can help. Even journals, they have so many cool journals out there. If like seeing a service provider isn't in your realm right now, like anything like that, to really get to know yourself better, get to know what you're experiencing better, because that also helps you better form the language to explain to somebody else more concisely what's going on. Because if you don't really explore that, and then you're flailing at the doctor of like, well, I don't really know what this is, like whatever, then it's hard for them to even help you in the way you want to be helped, because you're not really presenting it in a way that is helping them help you.
Right.
So
Yeah.
that is kind of the self-awareness piece. And then self-efficacy is, I think it's like Albert Bandura is like the psychologist who kind of come up with it, but it's basically this belief in your ability to advocate for yourself, or your ability to succeed in the face of adversity, in challenge, anything like that. And I think the more you become self-aware, the self-efficacy piece kind of naturally builds. But being able to have this empowerment and confidence that will, that you will achieve your goals, whether it's like health goals and exercise with your physical therapist, or maybe it's, with your doctor and getting a diagnosis, or maybe it's in mental health stuff with your therapist, what have you. It's having this knowing that you're on the right path, and that can help build the empowerment piece, which helps you find strength in your voice to self-advocate.
Yes, all the yes. I want to leave people with the encouragement to go download your free guide, because I think that I pulled it up here on your website, and I just really love this, like 4 steps basically to owning your role as a CEO of your body. And do you want to tell them more about it and where to find it?
Yeah, actually, that reminds me, because the link is broken on my website at this very present moment. But
Okay.
by the time you post this, I will make sure it's fixed.
Yes.
Yes, I really wrote that because I felt like in my work as a health coach, in the people like what I work with my friends, like anytime I'm talking about health stuff, it all comes from this foundational piece of owning the CEO role of your body and really learning how to work with your body. Because like I said, the confidence, the efficacy, like all that comes from owning this role and really taking charge for yourself. And I think that's what's really hard for people, especially when you feel like your body's betraying you and you're experiencing all these symptoms. There's all those side effects that make it really hard to own the role in your body as a CEO. So I wrote this guide as just the basic quick start free guide to where you can get started on doing that if you have no idea what that even means. So that's kind of really why I created the guide, because I really realized anybody I work with, don't work with, like people I just talk to, stories I hear on the street, like whatever, it all comes back to this piece of really being able to take charge of your life and allow yourself to be the authority, because like I said, you know your body best. No
Right.
doctor can tell you what you are and aren't feeling. You know that. No friend, no therapy, nobody can tell you that. You have to tell you that.
Yeah.
And it can be so easy to feel small when we're overwhelmed, or when we are challenged, or whatever, by whoever it is, but especially by these authority figures of doctors and whoever. And being able to just really own into that role helps with all of the other pieces to fall into place a little bit easier.
Yes. And these steps that are written on your website. I'm going to read them because I just want people to hear this, because it's covering exactly what you're saying and everything we've covered in this episode today. It's like how to audit your beliefs and current truths about your health and body, how to learn your body cues to utilize internal information for external results, how to build a wellness team to support you on your journey. That's topics definitely that we covered today, and how to try things on for size to find what works for you so you can take action and see results. It sounds like an amazing guide. I will definitely be linking your Instagram and your website in the show notes so everyone can find you.
Thank you. And thank you for listening to all my stories and rambling, because I sometimes find it hard to really, I just get so passionate and lit up and excited about things, but also want to share my own personal stories, because I have been down the wormholes of all of this stuff. Like, I feel like that's why I'm equipped to help people, because I've experienced it. Yeah. And I have learned in sharing my stories in the past that that really helps people see that they're not alone and all of that. So thank you for listening to all my stories, because I know sometimes it gets like rambly and hard for me to get to the point, but I'm just like, oh, I just get so fired up about these topics, because I don't think people talk about it enough, but I think it is so, so important, especially in this day and age of how the whole healthcare system is.
Yes, absolutely. And rambly is welcome here. I am absolutely a rambler. And I again just really admire you taking your passion and your personal story, and then also turning back to education and even back to the healthcare system to help people. I think it's incredible. And I've really enjoyed this part one. We're going to come back with part two up next. And so be sure to tune into that. And thank you for your time being here.
Thanks for having me.
Once again, thank you, creatures, for tuning in today and listening to our part one of self-advocacy in the American healthcare system. You can let us know what you think of this episode by filling out the podcast form. You can also leave feedback for other things you might want to hear on the podcast. Now available, there is also a virtual tip jar if you feel called to want to support this work. And as always, you can sign up for the SCC newsletter and receive bi-weekly emails and a once-a-month real-time update from me. There are lots of other ways to connect. Feel free to check out the links in the show notes, including finding Kristen on Instagram, as well as visiting her website. Next Friday, March 1st, we will be back with part two, talking about self-advocacy in relationships. Until then, keep taking care of yourself, creatures. We know the world needs it.